Good afternoon. You are tuned to KPOO, and this is Juno Afternoon. My name is Martha Moore. We've got a great program lined up for you today. I'll be talking with Tasha Whalen and Lincoln Farabee about their first Friday exhibit. Annie Bartholomew will be join me to talk about the Fish Fest coming up tomorrow. We'll hear from Mark Wheeler about fundraiser for the Northern Lights Church, and Wayne Painter will tell us about his art show on First Friday. We've got Writer's Almanac, Bird Note, music, and more. Thanks for joining us. The forecast calls for rain and high near 58, and tomorrow showers.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. On Monday, we reported on concerns by some U.S. lawmakers regarding a recent Supreme Court decision on the Voting Rights Act and how it could disenfranchise tribes. Today, Matt Laszlo reports on lawmakers' plans to address the ruling.
The court struck down a provision that forced certain jurisdictions to get the federal government's approval before changing voting laws. Florida Democratic Senator Bill Nelson says voters will be disenfranchised because the Justice Department will have to challenge states instead of pre-clearing them.
Which in effect means that decisions not made until after the election, instead of the burden of proof being on the state that enacts the voter suppression.
Virginia Democratic Senator Tim Kaine says that the good news is that the court didn't take out the core of the Voting Rights Act. They did, however, remove the part of the law requiring some states to get federal approval before changing voting laws. Kaine says localities should now fill that void themselves.
I would encourage every jurisdiction currently covered to continue to submit their changes to DOJ for preclearance, and to do it to show that their constituents that they're not afraid of being reviewed to make sure they're protecting the voting rights of all.
In July, the Senate Judiciary Committee is scheduled to hold hearings into the court's decision. For National Native News, I'm Matt Laszlo in Washington.
The Oregon Senate Monday approved a bill to allow Indian mascots in schools if nearby tribes agree. KWSO's William Robbins has more.
The decision by the Oregon legislature would reverse the Oregon Board of Education's ban of the use of Native American-themed mascot names by 2017. Governor John Kitzhaber told legislative leaders he doesn't support the proposed change and would veto it. Republican Senator Jeff Cruz said most Oregon tribes are on good terms with the school districts that use names like Warriors, Indians, and Braves.
What we don't want to do is get wrapped up in the fact that in other parts of the country the relationship isn't as good. Let's stay focused on Oregon.
Supporters of the ban, including some tribal groups, say the mascots are demeaning to Native American culture. The measure passed both chambers with enough votes to override a veto. There are 15 schools in Oregon that use American Indian mascots. In Warm Springs, I'm Will Robbins.
The Lone Ranger opens Wednesday in theaters across the country.
In the great beyond, a vision told me a great warrior would help me on my quest.
That's actor Johnny Depp, who plays Tonto. There's been much debate surrounding his portrayal of the fictional Native American character. Recently, at the red carpet premiere in California, both non-Native and Native attendees commented on Depp's role.
He's a bad guy, right? He's a Native American who's just into a lot of trouble, right? So I'm excited to see what he does.
I love watching him transform himself all the time. I'm looking forward to see what he does with this character.
There's a lot of the tribe supporting it. They really enjoy it.
John plays a great Tonto, and he's amazing.
I'm pro for the movie, and I think that it doesn't matter where we come from or what race we are.
Lots of opinions surround Tonto's costume in the movie. It includes a big black bird perched on top of his head. A cultural advisor on the film, known only as Troy, explains the vision of the bird, giving credit to Depp for the idea.
The raven on his head comes from the crow tassel wearers. They're a set of elite warriors for the Comanches. When you look at a feather, you don't just see the feather Indian way, you see the whole bird. And so he just did that literally, and it worked out well.
Some say the outfit reflects Hollywood stereotyping of Native Americans. Choctaw professor of American Indian Studies at the University of Illinois, Leanne Howe, says the film's connection to the Comanche and the tribe's choice to embrace it is part of sovereignty. Yet she says audiences will be exposed to the same old stereotype.
They don't see us as real people with jobs at the bank, jobs in the dry cleaners, with people with jobs on our reservations or in our communities. That Native person is invisible unless you have feathers in your hair.
The film is being touted as a reimagining of a classic Western. On this day in 1924, Army Corporal Mitchell Red Cloud Jr. was born. The Ho-Chunk Winnebago man received a posthumous Medal of Honor for his bravery during the Korean War. This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
And you are tuned to Juno Afternoon. My name is Martha Moore. I have in the studio with me Tasha Whalen and Lincoln Farabee, who are featured artists for First Friday, coming up this Friday. Hello.
Hi.
Good afternoon.
Welcome to the studio.
Thanks.
Tell us about the artwork that you'll have on display this Friday.
Well, mainly this Friday, we are sort of having a going away party. It'll be our last First Friday in Juneau. We are moving out of town in August. So we just wanted to invite everybody to come down. We've got some new photography of Lincoln's that'll be up. And then we'll have a lot of our jewelry, glass art jewelry, and some other glass sculptural work that'll be on sale as well. So we're just kind of want people to come down and say hello and goodbye and just let people know, and also thank people for supporting our business for over 8 years. We really appreciate the community of Juneau. So
great. I checked out your website. Your business is called Basement Studios,
mm-hmm.
and glasswork is just beautiful. Why glass? Why did you choose glass?
Well, Tasha had been designing and creating jewelry for long before I've ever met her, and together we started doing lamp working, which is a type of glasswork. And we just kind of took it to every level we could explore, and have gone, you know, to Europe several times to study glass, and it's just kind of grown, and glass just kind of fell into our lap, and it's been a medium that both of us can share together. A lot of times when you work it, it's a team effort, and so it's always nice to be creative with your partner and have those things to share. So it's just kind of lended itself, and we've taken it.
So can you describe a little bit the process that you work with the glass?
Sure. We work with several different styles of glass working. Primarily what you'll see at the co-op is the Juno Artist Gallery co-op is lamp working, which is a traditional way of making glass beads. You can also do sculptural work with it. So we have rods of colored glass that we start with as our foundation or a palette of colors. And those pieces of glass get melted in a torch. And it's a pretty small torch, but there's a considerable amount of heat close to the top of it. And it'll melt the glass to a consistency of honey, and that lets us sculpt with it primarily. So it's an ancient art form that has been used throughout thousands of years of bead making with different types of fuel as the propellant as well. So it's an interesting process.
So I saw a lot of jewelry on your website. Are there other pieces that you create?
Along with jewelry, we do some smaller sculptures, which are also done with the lampworking torch, as well as we have some larger fused pieces. And Tasha's really jumped with that. And it's we take larger sheets of glass, fuse them together in a kiln, and at that point you can either grind on them and carve them and create different shapes. Tasha's done a lot with little icons in Juneau, you know, like the pump house over in Douglas, or just to name one, and several others. As well as you can just fuse the glass and leave it uncarved and just create these great shapes and designs. We do also do some blown pieces as well, which is what most people think of when they think of glass work. And those are the large hot shops where you go in and you blow glass and you create vessels. And we do have several of those. Most of the blown work that we've ever done has been out of town because there's no hot shops in town. So we've traveled around to do those. And so that's a little limited on what we have, but we do have several pieces out.
And where do you come up with the ideas for what you're going to do?
Various places. A lot of them come from learning a process, like, let's say, casting glass which is a technique where you use lost wax casting. And so I might have an object that I'm inspired by. Let's say, I took a casting of a nephew's foot. And so I'm working on a series of baby feet, all cast in glass. So it just comes from around you. And then sometimes those pieces, this is larger scale work that I'm talking about, those pieces I incorporate into some sort of larger installation. So it's just a variety of places. There was a period in time where I had night kind of inspirations where I just get this kind of several hour creative burst that was overwhelming, but then I took a couple of days to write and draw everything out. So lately I haven't had that much sleep because of the children arriving, and that's not happening right now, which is fine.
So we, just to let the audience know, we do have a little baby in the studio here, and if you hear a little baby noises, that's what's going on. What's unique about your work?
The first thing that comes to mind, I mean, it's that we share it, we do it together, you know, and we both, although we do share a lot of stuff, a lot of the artwork together, when somebody asks us who made which piece, it's very easy for us to tell. I mean, we just know our styles. And the uniqueness is mostly, because we do it together. You know, the other part is that we are in Alaska. We enjoy being here, and there's not a lot of other art, you know, glass workers, at least locally in Alaska. There are several, but, you know, that does help to add to the uniqueness. And that we're pretty broad in the types of glasswork we do. We do like a lot of the traditional stuff from Venice or Murano, as well as a lot of what is popular in the United States, and that's the borosilicate working. So we do pretty broad there. And I'm sure Tasha has something to add to what makes us unique on this.
I think just the medium of glass, especially in a community that doesn't have like a glass furnace or a glass studio that specifically focus on that. It's been challenging over the years to get the proper equipment to do the processes that we learn. We typically learn something out, you know, either in Seattle or Italy or wherever, and then we come back and have to figure out how are we going to do this here. And a lot of that, you have to be really creative. And I've been lucky enough to get some grants previously as well, Rasmussen grant many years ago, and those things have just bumped us along and made things possible as far as kilns and large grinding equipment, and now we're packing it all up. So it's a bit of work.
So tell me, Lincoln, quickly about your photography.
The type of photography I'm really into and that I enjoy doing is called high dynamic range photography, and virtually stacking different exposures of photographs and creating them into one, and it just creates you can capture everything in the photographs, from shadows to the highlights equally as well, and it just makes the photos more brilliant and pop a little bit. And I just like it. It's very surreal looking, and I think Juno with its interesting lighting actually helps to foster some good photos.
So, so tell me again, where is this show?
It's the Juno Artist Gallery. It's in the Senate Building on South Franklin Street at 175 South Franklin. And we will be there Friday afternoon. The official times for the first Friday are 4:30 to 7 p.m., but we will be in the gallery an hour or so before that until closing time, which is typically 9 o'clock. We're the featured artists down there for the entire month of July, and so we'll be in and out. We're actually working a fair amount of hours this month, so if you're not able to come down on Friday, there's a good chance you'll run into us later in the month.
Okay, great. And so if you want to look at some of their work, check out Basement Studios on the Internet, and I can vouch for the fact that they work very well together, the way they've been passing the baby back and forth as they talk.
I feel like that's all we do.
So anyway, thanks so much for coming in, and good luck with your move and
thank
with
you.
Your work.
Thank you very much.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Tuesday, the 2nd of July, 2013. It was on this day in 1961 that Ernest Hemingway committed suicide in Ketchum, Idaho. He'd had trouble writing since he'd participated in World War II. He'd been struggling to write a long novel called The Sea Book, but it wasn't coming together, so he was only able to publish a small part of it called The Old Man and the Sea in 1952. but it got great reviews and won the Pulitzer Prize. He was still frustrated that all he'd been able to produce was a small novella. And then in 1953, he decided to go on safari in Africa, and he was badly injured in two separate plane crashes. He never really recovered from his injuries. He began to drink more and more. He wrote many pages about his experiences in Africa, but published none of it. And then in 1956, he found a trunk of old manuscripts and notebooks from his early days in Paris, and that turned into A Movable Feast about the period of his life just before he became famous. Almost as soon as he finished it, he began to suffer from insomnia and depression. He had problems with his eyes, he was losing his hair, and he'd come down with a skin condition. He also became obsessed with the idea that he was under FBI surveillance. His wife thought he was losing his mind, but in fact, FBI records would later show that they did have him under surveillance and even interviewed his psychiatrist. But he finally decided to check into the Mayo Clinic in Rochester, Minnesota, where he was subjected to electroshock therapy. The treatment did not help his depression, and he hated it. He wrote in a letter, "What is the sense of ruining my head and erasing my memory, which is my capital, and putting me out of business?" Doctors at the Mayo Clinic decided to release him on June 26 of that year. He went back to the house where his wife was staying in Ketchum, Idaho. And on the morning of July 2nd, he got up early, found his favorite shotgun, and in the foyer of the house, shot himself before his wife had woken up. She later said that the noise that woke her sounded like a drawer slamming shut. On this day in 1962, the first Walmart store opened for business in Rogers, Arkansas. Founder Sam Walton placed the early stores in rural areas to avoid competition with urban powerhouses like Kmart and Sears, and within 5 years he had opened 24 stores throughout Arkansas. Walmart is now the world's largest corporation with annual revenues higher than Switzerland's gross national product. And it's the birthday of the first African-American to serve as a Supreme Court Justice, Thurgood Marshall, born in Baltimore in 1908. Marshall became the legal director of the NAACP, and of the 32 cases he argued for that organization, he won 29. His biggest case was the landmark Brown versus Board of Education in 1954. He went on to serve as an appeals court judge under Kennedy, and Johnson appointed him to the Supreme Court in 1967. Thurgood Marshall, who said, "None of us got where we are solely by pulling ourselves up by our bootstraps. We got here because somebody, a parent, a teacher, an Ivy League crony, or a few nuns, bent down and helped us pick up our boots." And here's a poem by Kay Ryan, "Bad Day." Not every day is a good day for the elfin tailor. Some days the stolen cloth reveals what it was made for, a handsome waistcoat or the jerkin of an elfin sailor. Other days the tailor sees a jacket in his mind and sets about to find the fabric. But some days neither the idea nor the material presents itself, and these are hard days for the tailor elf. Bad Day by Kay Ryan, from her book Say Uncle, published by Grove Press and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac. This is Billy Collins, hoping you will join us next time here on the Writer's Almanac.
You are tuned to Juno Afternoon. My name is Martha Moore. I've been joined here in the studio by Annie Bartholomew, and she's here to talk about the 4th Annual Fish Fest. Hello, Annie.
Hey, Martha.
Yeah. So let's start out and just say, when and where is the Fish Fest?
All right. Fish Fest is happening tomorrow night at the Twisted Fish. It starts at 9 in the restaurant, and hopefully we'll have some tents up outside so people can go enjoy the nice weather. that's going to be happening.
And what will be happening? What's going to go on at this thing?
We got a few exciting artists coming there. Scorcher is a local DJ, DJ Taco Todd, who spins really cool, kind of old school reggae, rock steady, garage rock, all these really fun records you've never heard before. And after him is File Jerks, which is DJ Astronomar and Shorthand, and they're going to be spinning a lot of electronic music. It's really exciting for us because DJ Astronomar just got signed to a big label, so it's cool for him to come back to Juno and share that with us.
He's been here before?
He actually started out here. Yeah, I'm doing a story on him for KTO News, and he started in the Juno hip-hop community back in high school and kind of rose up the ranks here, got too big for Juno, went to Seattle, got too big for Seattle, and now he's in L.A., you know, doing his thing. And a lot of people enjoy it.
Good for him. Good for a local guy. So, and then dancing will be?
Oh, there will be plenty of dancing.
Mm-hmm. Great.
I think the best dancing is going to happen during the Alaskan Scorcher set. But the kind of more raving, jumping in the air, crazy dancing is probably going to happen during the File Jerk set. So, you know, a Scorcher show is something you can take your mom to and dance around because it's a lot of this old music. And, you know, when people hear old music, they kind of behave themselves a little better. It's just like you enter another time and you're dancing like that. And then, you know, things will probably get pretty crazy during this File Jerk set, but also very fun.
Cool. And food and drinks?
Food and drinks, yeah. Since there will be drinks, it's a 21 and over event. So, sorry, high schoolers, not 21 people in Juno. It's just going to be a party for the 21-year-olds and above. So, but, yeah, there will be food, there will be drinks, there will be everything. It's going to be the party of the summer, as it's been the past 3 years. We're planning to do it bigger and better than ever.
Great. So how much does this cost?
I forgot. I think it's $5 or $10. We're not allowed to mention it in our underwriting.
Oh.
It's
minimal.
It's minimal. And it's a donation to Exelon Radio. So you should definitely come and support us. Okay. And support music in this community.
Okay. And how long will it last then in the evening?
We're thinking we're going to start closing down at midnight. There's a lot of other cool events happening that night, so people are probably going to run over to the Alaskan, see Deering and Down. So that's secretly what we're hoping to do after Fish Fest. But, yeah, so we're going to hopefully close it down around midnight, and then, you know, people can just enjoy the 4th of July and see the fireworks with us.
And it's called Fish Fest. Why?
Because it happens at the Twisted Fish.
I see.
Yeah.
Okay. There may be some fish in there somewhere.
I hope so. I'm counting on the fish. You can smell them.
Well, great. So, again, this is, give us the time again.
It begins at 9 o'clock at the Twisted Fish tomorrow night, and it's a fundraiser for Exelon Radio. There's going to be really great music, lots of great dancing, and it's for people of all ages, older than 21.
Okay, great. Thanks so much for coming in, Annie.
Thanks, Martha.
This is Bird Note. Dr. Dennis Paulson is Bird Note's chief science advisor. An expert on shorebirds, he explains what new technology is revealing about shorebird migration.
This is telling us how far an individual bird migrates. It's telling us exactly where it stops and how few stopover places a typical shorebird has. So certain places it's very dependent on, and birds tend to go by exactly the same route year after year.
And for many shorebirds, migration is not strictly a north-south affair.
A shorebird can come to the New England coast in the fall from the Arctic and actually just set off across the North Atlantic Ocean to South America. And they land in, say, Venezuela or the Guianas. It's during the height of the rainy season. Lots and lots of things to eat. Then it goes on to its wintering grounds. In the spring, when it comes back north, this is a much drier time in parts of northern South America, but it's a time when rainfall is falling in southern United States. So coming up across the Gulf of Mexico and stopping somewhere in Louisiana or Texas or Nebraska, lots of ponds, lots of insects coming out, lots of worms. Basically, I think it's mostly food, probably prevailing winds as well.
So, which other habitats do shorebirds need to make their monumental journeys?
Coastal estuaries on both of our coasts and in fact, all over the world are extremely important because shorebirds are birds that feed on invertebrates exposed by low tides. So large mud flats, large estuaries where there are lots of invertebrate life that they can find easily when they stop in migration are vital to them.
Dennis has a lot more stories about shorebirds. Find them on our website, birdnote.org.
And you are tuned to Juno Afternoon. I'm Martha Moore. I've got with me in the studio here a full group of people, and I have Mark Wheeler, and I have Celia Wheeler, his daughter, and I also have Ginny Palmer, and they are here to talk about fundraiser for the Northern Lights Church. So tell us about the fundraiser, Mark.
Yeah, well, we're going to sell some products on the 4th of July. We'll be at Savico Park from noon until 8 or until we run out. We're selling homemade rhubarb sherbet and sorbet that I make in the Northern Lights kitchen. I've been making this and selling it at the Food Truck Fridays event. A little company I started called Casey Shattuck Sherbet Company. And Celia is one of my helpers. She helps me make the sherbet, and we sell it as a family on a Friday night. So we'll be there at Savico Park, and the proceeds will go to the church, who's replacing its roof. And maybe Jenny can talk about the roof project.
Yeah, Jenny, why does the roof need replacing?
Well, it's really interesting. It's about 30 years old or a little better. The newer shingles are 30 years old, and so it started to leak.
That timer means the sherbet is done. So after this, I got to go back and change out the ice cream maker. Sorry about that.
No worries. Anyway, so I thought we had a fire alarm or something. But the church, it's really interesting. Northern Light Church is more than a church. Since in 2012, there were 53 different groups that used the church, as well as 27 different performances. And so it's really an active community center. And right now, the church is leaking. And in fact, our poor secretary of the church, administrative head, has been leaked on in her office, and the copier has been leaked on. So we're in kind of dire straits right now of trying to get our roof rebuilt. And we're in the process of doing that. And Mark has been just really wonderful in the fact that he's going to be giving 90% of the proceeds that he sells on the 4th of July to the church. So this means that you are going to be buying a gift that keeps on giving, because you will not only be having a wonderful, nutritious treat on 4th of July, and we hope that nutritious. Oh, well, we just hope you sell them out. And then, but you also, it'll be keeping on giving to the church itself, where we can continue to provide for all of these different community groups that come to the church.
Like the Girl Scouts. Celia's Girl Scout troop meets at the church. Isn't that right, Celia?
Yep.
What kind of stuff do you do there in your troop?
Well, we do crafts, and we talk about where we're going on our meetings. Like, we sometimes go places, like we hike.
But you meet every other week at the church, right? It's a really great place. They can play games in there. And
oh, you bet.
They do their weekend and have a snack, and lots of other community groups use it. What are the youth choir?
Yeah.
What
is all the youth choir uses, the Alaska Youth Choir.
The violin group,
that's right. We also have a program for during the winter when kids are at risk and are homeless that we provided for them in the church. And just a lot of things. Haven House is another one. We provide for both camps, both Methodist and Presbyterian camps out the road. So it's a very, very busy place and very exciting. And but it's something that we all want to keep going. You can not only go ahead and buy from Mark, which would be wonderful because we really want to support him, and that would be a wonderful thing for your family to enjoy. But you can also donate directly to Northern Light, and you can either drop it off at the church, or there is the church address is just 400 West 11th Street, which is another way to do it. And then it's tax deductible. If you eat it at 4th of July, it's not tax deductible, but we'll still get the money.
Great. Do you have an idea of how much it'll take to replace the roof?
Yes, it's a big project, so it's about $250,000 that we need to raise. And so, because when you look at Northern Light, it's this really steep roof, and so there's just lots of unknowns. And the church was built, way back, over 50 years ago, and it's been an active part of the community ever since. So it's just really important that we can go ahead and do this before it starts leaking on anybody in the church other than our poor church secretary.
So Martha, don't tell Jeff Brown, but I brought you a sample. Would you like to try my sherbet?
Oh, yes. That's a lot of sherbet you're going to have to sell.
It's a lot of sherbet, but it's pretty good. People seem to like it.
Oh, that's excellent. It's really good. It's not too sweet, and I like that. It tastes really, like the fruit.
Just like rhubarb. Yes, I make the sherbet and then sorbet for
those
that...
But in a good way.
Yeah.
Also, he gets the rhubarb from the flat. That's why he calls it the Casey Shattuck Sherbet Company.
Oh.
Because Casey Shattuck was the person... Our neighborhood used to be like a great farm. So she called... And her name was Casey, so...
It was a man. He was a dairy farmer named Casey, right?
Yeah. And so he's decided to call his company that.
Well, I think that sounds wonderful. It makes it a really hometown thing.
And the church members for this benefit, it's really cool. Like, members of the church are donating rhubarb and sugar and cream and all the ingredients. And we have volunteers who are going to be helping sell the sherbet on the 4th of July. So it's been a kind of a cool community project. But it's a wonderful church. It's a wonderful space. I was just thinking, Celia also went to preschool there. The Juno Co-op preschool is housed in the church as well.
That's
and
true.
A wonderful program that is. So,
so where
lots of community groups benefit.
Where are you going to be now, Mark, on the 4th of July?
We're going to be in Douglas at Savico Park. So right when you're going to the ice rink, we'll be right out front there. There's going to be some food carts, some other charities, and other folks selling food, and we'll be having a sherbet and sorbet for those. Sorbet doesn't have the dairy.
Anybody can have it.
And what other things are you doing to raise money?
Oh, there have been a variety of things, that we've talked about, having concerts, and also we're just kind of getting started, putting out a donation box where when people come to the church for whatever, they could put money in that box very easy. And that way it would really help us get to the point that we can replace that roof. And the church itself, the congregation itself, is working hard to do it because we just recognize how important Northern Light is to this community.
Yeah, it's a very important community asset in so many ways. Is there anything else you want to add on this?
Just come on down, rain or shine. We'll have a canopy. Hopefully it won't rain, but it's good regardless of the weather.
Yeah, and it's excellent sherbet, I can tell you that.
Okay. Somebody told me they came up to me at the Food Truck Friday one time. They said they had to have some because they heard it was made with awesome.
It is definitely made with awesome.
Someone was waiting way before it started.
Oh, yeah.
The first day,
my friend Joe came and heard about it, and he was there from 4 o'clock. We didn't show up till 5, and he bought 6 of them, and he's
wow.
a fan.
Wow.
So if you like rhubarb, if you like, a lot of people have these nostalgic associates with rhubarb, like dipping it in sugar when they were a kid or their aunt's pie. It's really that kind of rhubarb flavor, intense rhubarb goodness.
And after the 4th of July, this is a business for you, right?
Well, I just do it at the Food Truck Fridays at the Jack. Every Friday they're having the concerts in the park at the Jack. So we sell our sherbet. We make it during the week, and then we sell it there on Fridays. And so, my son Ferguson helps sell the sherbet on Friday nights with me.
Sounds like a wonderful family thing and great thing for the community because sherbet is so good.
Mm-hmm.
And so thanks so much for coming in, Mark, Celia, and Jenny.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks, Martha.
Thank you.
We started off this morning just kind of hanging around looking for something fun to do.
another bored kid in town. But no matter how bad my day gets, just you wait and see. About 4 o'clock, coming down the block is something sweet for me. Hey, looky, mommy, looky, comes the ice cream man. He drove all the way from the ice cream land. Standing on a corner with a dollar in my hand, just waiting for his truck to come around. When I hear those bells go ting-a-ling-a-ling, my heart begins to pound. Cause it sounds so sweet all around the street to hear the ice cream man come down.
Did you ever think that you could find
so many different kinds?
Each one looks so cool and fine,
and they're all right by me. Such a smile on every face, so many flavors all in one place. It's ice creams and summer dreams, that's the way this world should be. In high school, the very first I ever held down. Now in the long run, I'm the only one knows every kid in town. See him running in from the mansions and from the shacks by the riverside. You know they all seem oh so different, but they want the very same thing inside. The highly looky mommy looky comes the ice cream man. I drove all the way from the ice cream land, standing on a corner with a dollar in her hand, just waiting for my truck to come around. No, I don't make very much money, but I got the best job in town. You know it sounds so sweet all around the street to hear the children come a-running all around.
Did you ever think that you could find
so many different kinds?
Each one looks so cool and fine, and they're all right by me.
Such a smile on every face, so many flavors all in one place. It's ice creams and summer dreams, that's the way this world should be. Hey, look, mommy, look, comes the ice cream man. Drove all the way from the ice cream land. Standing on a corner with a dollar in a hand, just waiting for the truck to come around. When I hear those bells, my heart begins to pound. Sounds so sweet coming down the street to hear the old truck a-hum. See the children come a-running, hear the ice cream man come down.
This is Burn, an energy journal. I'm Alex Chadwick, now with this new series on energy and climate. Big subjects. In an election year, everything feels big.
The highest bid was $105,304,581 by Shell Gulf of Mexico.
We break down what's overwhelming into smaller personal stories about what matters in people's lives.
It's a matter of energy apartheid. We're talking green and clean, but oftentimes end up acting dirty.
Energy and climate. From new Arctic oil fields to gas wells in Pennsylvania to voting on wind in Michigan. Coming up on Burn, an energy journal from Sound Vision Productions and American Public Media.
Tune in for this special program Thursday, July 4th at 3 o'clock during a Juno afternoon.
are tuned to Juno Afternoon. My name is Martha Moore. I have in the studio with me Wayne Painter, and he's here to talk about First Friday's show called Earth, Metal, Clay, and Fire. Hello, Wayne.
Hello, Martha.
Thanks for coming in. And what does the title refer to?
Well, we have a group of three artists, Juno artists, myself, and longer time, I guess, in carving artist Ray Watkins, and also a ceramics artist Jim Bowman. And the way that we come up with the title of our show is Earth, Metal, Clay, and Fire. The earth provides all of our needs in this life, sometimes more abundantly than others. We use the material that the earth provides to create our objects of beauty, our ceramic work, our carvings, and I've also gotten into embossing in metal, copper and gold. And so we kind of stuck on that title since the earth provides all of the materials that we need for doing our artwork, and also the clay provides the material for doing the ceramics, and fire provides the need to heat the clay objects into a crucible so that it can be fired, and also fire provides us the heat for doing making our metal knife blades, and also for making our gold and steel and our copper. So we do embossings, embossings in copper, embossings in cast paper, and I do some in gold, 24 karat gold.
Was it your idea to put the three artists' work together in one show?
Yes. Originally, I signed up to do the show over a year ago, and it was going to be a solo show with just my own artwork. I had surgery, and surgery kind of went bad, and so I'm in a wheelchair right now, but recovering, and so I wanted to continue on with the show because I thought it would be interesting to combine my own artwork with other people's artwork too and make it a more interesting show.
And where is the show?
The show is at the Juno Arts and Humanities Center, basically across the street from us.
Also known as the Jack.
Yes.
And what time is it this Friday?
The reception, opening reception, is starts at 4:30 until I think it's about 7, could be a little bit later. If we have people there, we'll stay.
And will this exhibit stay for a while?
Yes, it'll be for the most of the month of July, and it will be featuring all different kinds of artwork, mostly my own artwork, and Ray Watkins' artwork is from the Tlingit tradition of artwork, and Jim's ceramic work his work is very unique, and I really appreciate his talent. I think he's more gifted than he thinks he is, but it's very unique. You basically have to come and see it.
So the pieces that you make, well, let's just start with yours, the metal pieces. What sort of pieces are they?
Well, the root of this whole thing started with a class that I took at the university a number of years ago, and it was entitled Printmaking. And I took the printmaking part of that and turned it into embossing, embossing in paper. And I got the idea that I wonder what copper would look like if you embossed it. So I tried that, and it turned out pretty good, but the press that they had was kind of wrinkled up the edges. So it was kind of an experimental situation. I spent quite a lot of time and developed my own technique for doing the embossings, and some of the people that have seen my work, you know, they describe it as being very intricate, and oftentimes they use the word jewelry, although it's not really jewelry. It sometimes makes you think it might be. some of the pieces that I think turn out very well, I send them out to be plated with 24 karat gold, and they are, you can only describe them as being over the top, and they truly do look like jewelry, although I put them in frames, so they're framed, and I also make bentwood boxes, and they're the traditional steam bent wooden boxes. They're made in yellow cedar and red cedar, and have carved lids on them. And I do inlay some of the pieces with various designs, such as a beaver, and I also have a golden eye fish, which is, you know, something that you can catch in local waters around here. So it has a very interesting design, because I've gone from sort of a flat two-dimensional design into what I call a three-dimensional design, where it actually looks like a fish, but it's a very Northwest Coast style artwork.
And will these items be for sale?
Some of the items will be for sale. Some of them items are from a private collection or various private collections, and will only be for display. But the good side of that is, if you fall in love with one of the pieces that is in a private collection, why, the likelihood of us being able to carve something very similar to that piece is very good. each piece is individually carved, so although they look very similar, if you get them side by side, why, there are subtle differences. I have quite a few of bear masks that vary in size, and I kind of make smiley faces on them. I like the happy face of a carving, and I believe I've only painted one of my masks. Most of my masks, I feel the wood shows much more creativity and intricate design in the wood itself. So I leave them with a tung oil finish.
And the other two gentlemen, Ray Watkins, does carving. What are his work? What are those items?
His work he does painted masks more than I do. Some of his work is more varied probably than mine. I'm a relatively young carver in years of experience. I started carving in year 2000, I believe it was, and Ray has been an instructor at the university for quite a long time, and he's been one of my inspirational leaders and instructors, and as well as, you know, many of the other world-famous carving people.
And the ceramics by Jim Bowman, what sort of work does he do?
Well, he has, it's kind of, I guess, a little difficult for me to describe his work. It varies so much from container-type vessels, bowls, other containers that I really wouldn't even begin to be able to describe. But they're very unique. They have, I believe it's a glazed finish on most of them of various colors. I don't know how he's able to get all the dramatic colors from this material, basically starting with clay. And he always has a kind of his own little insignia inscription that is raised on that. So you really have to come and see his work to fully appreciate that. And I think it fits in so very nicely with the artwork of Ray Watkins and myself.
Great. So this is at 4:30 at the Jack this Friday. This is the opening reception, and then the show, I'm sorry, how long did you say it would last?
I believe it goes through the end of July, and I don't know, they have a month-long gallery show coming up in September, August and September as well, so there's a kind of a transition period where we need a few days to set up and tear down and all that kind of stuff. But it'll basically be for through the month of July.
Okay, so that's one of the stops that people should make on their first Friday routine. And so we've got three artists with specifically different artwork, but still sort of comes together in a nice show, I assume.
Yes. Yeah, I think it will be a great show. I think we've got some unique work by myself for sure, and I think Jim's ceramic artist's pieces are very unique in their own way, and I think the whole show basically complements the work of all three of us artists. And I'm happy to be a participant.
Okay, great. Thanks so much for coming in, Wayne. And thank you for your artwork. And this really makes our first Friday experience much, much nicer when there's so much to do. There's so many great artists in this town. And I've always enjoyed going around and looking at the work.
Yes, I believe it's going to be a great show. And if you're interested in the Northwest culture, certainly you will have a lot of it available in one spot.
Okay. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
If you're a fan of Garrison Keillor, here's an opportunity you won't want to miss. KTOO is planning a special 40th anniversary trip to see a live broadcast of A Prairie Home Companion on September 21st. Our custom travel package includes 3 nights at the St. Paul Hotel, tickets to the show, ground transportation, a K2 reception, and a visit to Minnesota Public Radio Studios.
Proceeds benefit KTOO. Visit ktoo.org/anniversary to learn more.
A reminder to Capital Transit and Caravan passengers. Buses and vans will not be operating on Thursday, July 4th in recognition of the Independence Day holiday. Full service will resume on Friday, July 5th. The contact number for Capital Transit is 789-6901 and Caravan is 463-6194. The drivers and staff at Capital Transit and Caravan would like to wish everyone a happy and safe Independence Day.
Thank you.
And that's it for today's Juno Afternoon. Thanks for joining me, and thanks for all the guests today for coming in. To listening to any of today's interviews, visit the KTOO.org website under Local Programs and Juno Afternoon. Please join us tomorrow at 3 p.m. Tomorrow's show will feature the Capitol Steps 4th of July radio special. The weather for the rest of the day is rains, lows around 49. For tomorrow, showers, highs around 48. And Independence Day, mostly cloudy, scattered showers, highs around 60. You're listening to KTOO-FM in Juneau, Alaska. K2 is heard on these translators. We broadcast at 104.3 FM in downtown Juneau and Douglas. KTOO also broadcasts in the Valley and Auk Bay area. Tune to K276 AF 103.1 in Lemming and Schweitzer Creek, K269 AO at 101.7. Gustavus listens to K on K201 AM 88.1. K220 BT serves Huna at 91.9. An Excursion Inlet and Icy Strait hear K2 on K210 AS 89.9. In Juneau, you can also receive K2 on GCI Cable, Juneau on Digital Channel 871. KRNN can be heard at Digital Channel 872, and KXLL can be found at 873. We are also online at www.ktoo.org.
They were in the right place as far as they were fighting fire on the mountain, and that was their charge. That is their job.
A federal investigative team will look into the deaths of 19 elite firefighters.
It's Tuesday, July 2nd, and this is All Things Considered.